The U.S. state of Georgia ramps up security with a potential fourth Trump indictment looming on allegations of election interference.
We counted the ballots three times. He lost this state, and he continued to say he didn't lose it, and it's just creating a lot of tension and a lot of chaos.
Plus, the death toll climbs in the aftermath of apocalyptic wildfires on the Hawaiian island of Maui.
I saw one Fred dead on the ground like a piece of charcoal, like Pompeii almost. Is dead. I mean, there's nothing you could do. It was that fast.
And Barbie blows out the competition for another weekend in U.S. movie theaters. Today is Monday, August 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Lori London in Washington. A Georgia prosecutor appears ready to lay her case against former President Donald Trump in front of a grand jury this week. Despite tight security measures, some officials are concerned that violence could accompany a potential fourth indictment of Trump over election interference. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
Security measures are tight in Georgia's Fulton County ahead of a possible fourth indictment of former President Donald Trump. It is expected that Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis will present her case to a grand jury this week. She has been investigating whether Trump pressured state officials to alter the 2020 presidential election result and plot to use fake electors. The former president calls the Georgia probe a witch hunt. Top voting official Gabriel Sterling, who helped with the 2020 presidential election recount in the state, could be called to testify in the case. He appeared on ABC's This Week show.
We counted the ballots three times. He lost this state, and he continued to say he didn't lose it, and it's just creating a lot of tension and a lot of chaos.
Sterling was asked if Trump's strong public criticism of District Attorney Willis could lead to some kind of violence.
It's not going to be a bunch of conspirators together. It's going to be one probably mentally unstable individual who's going to be radicalized through this process.
If the former president is indeed indicted in Georgia, voters will need to carefully assess his 2024 presidential bid, said Republican presidential candidate Chris Christie on ABC.
And what I think Republican voters have to ask themselves is two things. First is he really the guy under indictment in four different cases, given the conduct that he committed, someone who can beat Joe Biden or any other Democrat in November 2024?
President Joe Biden is himself under investigation for allegedly mishandling classified documents. A special counsel was appointed last week to more independently investigate the president's son, Hunter Biden, on his foreign business dealings. Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin commented on the case on ABC.
We all seem clear that this guy was addicted to drugs and did a lot of really unlawful and wrong things, and we have said let the justice system run its course.
After Hunter Biden's recent guilty plea agreement for tax evasion and illegal gun possession unraveled, the prospects of his case heading now to trial are much higher, according to prosecutors. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
At least seven people were killed in southern Ukraine following another round of Russian shelling. Also over the weekend, a Russian warship on Sunday fired warning shots at a cargo ship in the Black Sea. It's the first time Moscow has fired on merchant shipping beyond Ukraine since exiting a UN brokered deal last month. We hear more from Associated Press correspondent Jackie Quinn.
In Ukraine, a newborn baby was among the half dozen victims killed in shelling in the southern Kherson region. Meanwhile, Ukrainian forces say they've captured back some land in the Zaporizhia region.
Дякую.
President Volodymyr Zelensky is thanking Western allies for their weapons contributions, including the Patriot missiles, which he says save civilian lives. And in the Black Sea, a Russian warship fired warning shots at a cargo ship flagged to Palau. It's the first aggression against a merchant ship other than Ukraine's since Moscow pulled out of the global grain deal. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Niger's junta leaders are open to negotiation to avert conflict with West Africa's regional bloc ECOWAS, that according to a group of senior Nigerian Islamic scholars Sunday after meeting with the military insurgents in Niamey. ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, is mulling how to restore civilian rule and reinstate Niger's constitutionally elected president, Mohamed Bazoum. Still, some analysts say the coup leaders appear to have gained the upper hand. VOA correspondent Margaret Bashir at the United Nations has more on Niger and other issues top of mind for the UN.
The West African regional group ECOWAS said Thursday it had activated its standby military force after a deadline had passed for Niger's military coup leaders to reverse their actions and reinstate President Mohamed Bazoum.
The Secretary General is very concerned over the deplorable living conditions that President Bazoum and his family are reported to be living under as they continue to be arbitrarily detained by members of the Presidential Guard in Niger. The Secretary General reiterates his concern over the health and safety of the President and his family, and once again calls for his immediate, unconditional release and his reinstatement as head of state.
In Sudan, the first humanitarian convoy reached East Darfur since the start of the conflict in mid-April. The situation in Darfur has dramatically deteriorated since fighting began between rival generals. The UN Security Council met Wednesday to discuss the violence.
The longer this war continues, the greater the risk of fragmentation and foreign interference and erosion of sovereignty and the loss of Sudan's future, particularly its youth.
In another development, Syria agreed to allow the UN to continue using three border crossings from Turkey to reach 4 million people living beyond government control in northwest Syria for up to 6 months. Looking ahead, the Security Council plans to hold a rare public meeting Thursday on the human rights situation in North Korea.
Protecting people around the world is an integral part of the UN Charter and an important responsibility of the Security Council, and that means holding the DPRK regime accountable for its human rights abuses and violations.
The U.S., Japan, South Korea, and Albania requested the session. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The death toll from the Maui wildfires reached 93 on Sunday, and hundreds more are still missing as relatives frantically search for signs their loved ones may still be alive. Resident Ace Yabes says 9 of his relatives are missing.
We've been to a lot of hotels inside Lahaina, but none of them are there. So we've been to a police station, we called Red Cross, anywhere that we can find them, but nothing, no zero.
Another resident who also spoke to the Associated Press says he and 3 friends were trying to flee from the fire in a car, but by getting out of the car and running to the ocean, he was the only one who survived as his friends perished when the flames consumed the vehicle.
I ran out of the car and ran for my life, ran down to the ocean. I was only quarter mile from the ocean, and they stayed in their car. They died with their dogs and everything. 3 of my friends in one car and 2 dogs died.
Hawaii Governor Josh Green likened the burned out city of Lahaina to a war zone after the fast moving blaze engulfed the northwest coast of Maui Tuesday, leveling much of the historic resort town and scorching nearly everything in its path. Here are some of the other stories we're following from around the world. Prosecutors in Paris have taken over the investigation into the deaths of at least 6 migrants whose boat sank trying to cross the channel between France and England as police hunt the traffickers responsible. After a week marked by a string of deadly shipwrecks, Pope Francis Sunday said the number of migrants dying in the Mediterranean is an open wound for humanity. Insurgents opened fire Sunday on a convoy carrying Chinese citizens in the restive Baluchistan province in southwestern Pakistan. There were no casualties as a result of the attack in the port city of Gwadar. Poland's ruling party wants to ask voters in a referendum whether they support accepting thousands of illegal immigrants from the Middle East and Africa as part of a European Union relocation plan. And the political party of Ecuador's assassinated presidential hopeful Fernando Villavicencio picked his would-be vice presidential candidate to replace him just a week before the election. The brazen assassination at a crowded political rally last week has left residents outraged and afraid. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute. Scientists, using data from NASA's Curiosity rover, found the first evidence of wet-dry cycling on Mars. One of many theories leading to the origin of life on Earth is based on something called wet-dry cycling. This implies that a continual series of wet and dry ground conditions on our planet helped create the necessary chemical building blocks for bacterial life. Curiosity found an assortment of hexagonal patterns of well-kept ancient mud cracks, providing another clue that the Red Planet may have hosted microbial life early in its history. The lead author of a study detailing these findings is William Rappin of France's Research Institute in Astrophysics and Planetology. He said in a NASA press release that these newfound mud cracks are made when wet-dry conditions repeatedly occur, perhaps seasonally. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. Donald Trump and his Republican rivals held competing events over the weekend at the Iowa State Fair. And while a former president overwhelmingly dominates opinion polls,
we have not taken any chances. We're way up in the polls in Iowa and all over the country. We're up by over 50 points. That's a lot, but we don't want to take any chances. We'll be back. We love you very much, and just take care of yourself. Stay healthy.
Attending the annual fair is a political must for aspiring presidential candidates in the state that kicks off the Republican nominating contest in January. Meanwhile, in the early days of U.S. politics, a candidate's charisma didn't seem to matter much in a presidential election, but in the new digital era of social media, a candidate's ability to connect with voters could determine whether he or she sits in the Oval Office. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman reports from the White House.
The respective approaches of Joe Biden and his predecessor Donald Trump to retail politicking helped each win the U.S. presidency and could give one of them the top job a second time in next year's election. After speeches, Biden sometimes works the crowd, posing for selfies and giving hugs. Then there's Trump's signature thumbs-up gesture, the fist bumps and the dance moves. Despite facing dozens of felony charges for crimes allegedly committed before, during, and after his term in office, Trump boasts about his deep connection with his supporters.
Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
For those who studied leadership, charisma is more than just being telegenic. Successful politicians excel at messaging, says Ulrich Jensen of Arizona State University's School of Public Affairs.
You feel like you're one of them or they are one of you, right? And so kind of creating that collective identity, propelling values, all of those things can be done by framing the message, providing the substance and articulating in a way that's engaging and present.
By shaking hands, gesturing, and repeating signature lines, presidential candidates amplify their message to the wider world, says Stephen Farnsworth, director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies at the University of Mary Washington.
The vast majority of people who are looking at these presidential candidates will never meet any of them. They will simply decide based on what they see on the media whether this candidate or that candidate appeals to them more.
Trump and Biden provide lessons in communications for those seeking to challenge them, according to Farnsworth.
You have to be genuine. I think that what you see with both of these men is exactly who they are.
Awkward politicians cannot learn to be authentic, but they can be coached on what to emphasize. Trump's first White House press secretary, Sean Spicer, tells VOA.
One of the things that sometimes politicians do is they get nervous about certain qualities. And so then they're afraid of leaning into them. And I think what Trump did was he just went with his gut a lot more about what he thought and what he believed.
Biden bets on his audiences believing his promises of staying faithful to his beliefs.
I never, ever tell you anything I don't mean. And I never tell you anything you don't believe.
The unblinking gaze of the video camera lens can expose presidential candidates who are not genuine. Voters see this and are likely to decide not to support them, no matter how much money campaigns spend trying to convince them otherwise. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Despite efforts by the United States to curb migration, the flow of migrants at Mexico's northern border continues. But it isn't just people coming in from Central and South American countries. Veronica Villafane narrates this story by Vicente Calderon in Tijuana and Victor Hugo Castillo in Reynosa.
Men from Tajikistan in Central Asia, once a part of the Soviet Union bound for the United States. They are here in Mexico requesting asylum because of the war in Ukraine. Fayud is part of this group.
I won't go to America. Yeah.
Immigration officials say they're seeing more asylum seekers from post-Soviet countries. The Mexican government reports the number of migrants from Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan almost doubled from 2021 to 2022, and the numbers are still rising. Reporter Ulambek Asanaliev, who works for Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, set out to find out why and document their journey.
Sometimes they get in touch with criminals, cartels.
Asanaliev learned that many of the asylum seekers had Russian citizenship and could have been conscripted to fight in the war in Ukraine. Instead, they chose to flee.
More than 1 million people from Kyrgyzstan, for example, they are working as like as work laborers in Russia. And same as in Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, you know. And after the war started in Russia, situation changed.
Many of these migrants are making their way to the Mexican border cities of Tijuana and Reynosa. Carlos Victor Peña Ortiz is the mayor of Reynosa.
Many people from Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, and many other countries are now passing through this border. The migration flow continues to increase.
Most arrive first in Mexico City or Cancun before heading to border ports of entry. But many of the migrants from post-Soviet countries in Central Asia don't go to shelters seeking help, says Enrique Lucero, director of Tijuana's Migrant Affairs Office.
As in the case of Asia and Russia, or those from Kazakhstan, people from all those regions are staying in hotels.
But for many, it took all they had to get here. Ayud says it took him 4 months to make it to Mexico, hoping to get asylum in the United States.
And all my money finished for hotel, I don't have money. For food, I don't have money.
Four from Belarus.
These four migrants are from Belarus, a Russian ally that shares a border with Ukraine.
Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan.
This man, part of a group of 25 people from Kyrgyzstan, hopes to make his way to a relative in the U.S.
Where are you from? Philadelphia.
Okay. Do you have friends there?
I have friends.
Yes.
I have a brother.
They join the thousands of others waiting at the border, hoping for safety and a new start in the United States. For Vicente Calderon in Tijuana and Victor Hugo Castillo in Reynosa, Veronica Villafañe, VOA News.
The arrival of international football star Lionel Messi to play for Inter Miami is generating a lot of buzz, infusing new life and fan enthusiasm into Major League Soccer.
Jacopo Luzzi
reports on Messi's cultural and financial impact on the sport in the U.S.
Lionel Andres Messi!
Leo Messi's arrival to the United States Soccer League has generated all kinds of buzz from adoring fans, thrilled at the chance to see him in action live on the field.
Experience.
Awesome.
Incredible game, everything, the atmosphere, everyone.
In his July debut as team captain of Inter Miami, he scored a last-minute goal leading the team to victory against Mexico's Cruz Azul. MLS Commissioner Don Garber sees Messi's U.S. arrival as a turning point for the league.
This is a transformational moment for Major League Soccer. To have arguably the best player that's ever played the game to make Major League Soccer his league of choice.
DC United coach Wayne Rooney hopes Messi joining the MLS could attract other high-profile international players. Shortly after announcing Messi's arrival to the team, Inter Miami also signed his former Barcelona teammates Sergio Busquets and Jordi Alba.
See, I think it was important for the league to get Messi in, to show that he can compete as well against, you know, a country and a environment which is putting a lot of money out there.
British football commentator Callum Williams says the U.S. soccer is now more mature and adds he has seen steady growth in the sport's popularity in the U.S.
Because of where Messi is from and because of the relationship in football that is now being nurtured between North and South America and the Latin community in North America, I think he's the perfect player at the perfect time.
Some experts see Messi's arrival as part of a growing trend of international players choosing to play in the U.S. Fernando Fiore, a longtime World Cup and MLS commentator, says he has seen how the league's popularity has been boosted by incoming international players.
Ibra, que hizo tremenda producción acá. Gareth Bale.
Ibra, who made a tremendous contribution. Gareth Bale, who did a short stint but helped win a championship. And now, more are coming.
Securing Messi Messi didn't come cheap, with his contract costing between $50 million and $60 million annually. But it will likely be worth it. Over 12 million viewers tune in from 171 countries to watch his debut, making it the most watched soccer game in US television history. Kellen Williams says soccer could finally be ready to hit the big time in the US.
People who aren't even football fans have said that it is the sport of the future in this country, but it does feel as though that future is now.
It is expected soccer's popularity will continue to grow, with the US set to host the Copa America tournament next summer and the World Cup in 2026, positioning the country and the sport at the center of the international soccer map. Jacopo Luzzi for VOA News, Washington.
And the Barbie movie continues to roll over the competition in U.S. movie theaters. Associated Press entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta reports.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Barbie earned another $33.7 million in North American theaters this weekend, according to studio estimates. That puts it in the number one spot for movie audiences for a fourth week and pushes it past the $500 million mark in North America. Oppenheimer is in second place. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem is number three. Meg 2 The Trench takes fourth place, while The Last Voyage of the Demeter debuts in fifth. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, we thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Be well and have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Five U.S. citizens unjustly detained in Iran have been released from prison and placed under house arrest, the first positive step in a negotiating process that, as Secretary of State Antony Blinken expects, will lead to their return home to the United States.
There's more work to be done to actually bring them home. My belief is that this is the beginning of the end of their nightmare, and the nightmare that their families have experienced.
The five Americans are Siamak Namazi, Murad Tahbaz, Imad Shargi, and two people who wish to remain private. Namazi, Tahbaz, and Shargi were all imprisoned on false charges of espionage and were released from Tehran's notorious Evin prison. Because negotiations for the return home of the Americans remain ongoing and delicate, as National Security Council spokesperson Adrian Watson said in a statement, U.S. officials did not offer details about what has been agreed upon or is being discussed. In an interview on CNN, White House National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications John Kirby said, however, that negotiations are about giving and taking, and there was no universe in which we were going to get these five Americans home without some bartering, some compromising with the Iranians, and that bargaining is going on right now. Secretary of State Blinken made clear some parameters of the process.
In any event, in any respect, Iran will not be receiving any sanctions relief. And in any instance where we would engage in such efforts to bring Americans home from Iran, Iran's own funds would be used and transferred to restricted accounts such that the monies can only be used for humanitarian purposes, which, as you know, is permitted under our sanctions. There's an exemption for humanitarian that's there from the start.
We will continue to enforce all of our sanctions. We will continue to push back resolutely against Iran's destabilizing activities in the region and beyond, including now in supplying Russia with drones for its war of aggression against Ukraine. And none of these efforts take away from that, said Secretary Blinken. These are entirely separate tracks. We focused on getting our people home, but we continue to take strong actions against Iran's other activities that we, in so many other countries, profoundly object to.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.